Hey, and welcome to FutureThinkers.org, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and consciousness. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. If you're new to the show and you want to get a list of our favorite books, popular episodes, and to join our community, go to FutureThinkers.org/start. All Future Thinkers episodes are now on video. To watch the premiere of each episode and join the discussion live, subscribe to our YouTube channel at FutureThinkers.org/YouTube.
All right, so today we're going to talk a bit about novelty. Someone sent you this Terrence McKenna clip about the hummingbird. We'll just play it right now.
So, for instance, you know, I've made this example before. A child lying in a crib and a hummingbird comes into the room and the child is ecstatic. Because this shimmering iridescence of movement and sound and attention, it's just wonderful. I mean, it is an instantaneous miracle when placed against the background of the dull wallpaper of the nursery and so forth. But then mother or nanny or someone comes in and says, "It's a bird, baby. Bird. Bird." And this takes this linguistic piece of mosaic tile and places it over the miracle and glues it down with the epoxy of syntactical momentum. And from now on, the miracle is confined within the meaning of the word. And by the time a child is 4 or 5 or 6, there no light shines through. They have tiled over every aspect of reality with a linguistic association that blunts it, limits it, and confines it within cultural expectation. But this doesn't mean that this world of signification is not outside, still existent, beyond the horizons, the foreshortened horizons of a culturally validated language.
Well, so he's talking about this kind of linguistic overlay that that is plastered over our raw experience at all times. And it's not just linguistic, actually. It's symbolic overlay of any kind, because we have other kinds of concepts like numbers and relationships between things and the stories that we tell to connect all these different concepts. And it's actually a very thick overlay, multi-layered, too. And so, I mean, but there, it's not, doesn't mean that it's permanently there. We can blast through it with things like a lot of meditation or psychedelics, if you want to go for the quick one.
Yeah. So really what he's talking about is novelty, seeing something for the first time, like through the eyes of a child. You don't have any pre-existing frameworks or language or anything to layer over top of it that gives it meaning above and beyond what is just being taken in by your eyes. And this is something that a lot of people, I think, really chase after. The feeling of something new, something surprising, something unexpected. It's even listed as one of the top needs, that I think one of the 6 needs that Tony Robbins brought up in one of his videos. And it's an interesting thing. It would be like alchemy if you could figure out how to get your mind into a state where everything was new. And the Buddhists actually talk about this quite a lot.
Yes.
Open awareness. Yeah.
Yes. So I think that the sense of novelty is something that pierces through our overlay, our language overlay. Because suddenly we're like, oh, this thing is not part of my framework. It's not part of this overlay.
It's not caught by the pattern recognizer in our head.
Yeah, and brain. Just for a very quick moment, you're in that state of almost like quantum superposition, where your reality stops being solid and it becomes changing, if that makes sense. I don't know if that... That makes
sure.
sense.
Expand on it.
Because we exist so much in this mind of symbols and language, things seem stable. Things seem like they make sense.
Right.
So they are, you know, in quantum terms, if we take that, the split experiment, the double slit experiment.
Right.
Then the photon has become solidified.
Right. By observing it, it becomes.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
But uncertainty or novelty for a very short moment kind of throws you out of that. Or rather, I would maybe say that novelty throws you into uncertainty for a split moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to observe it and kind of stay in that moment and prolong it, then it can be very profound and change a lot of your frameworks.
It's not obvious why novelty or a state of being where everything seems fresh and new would be worth being in. Because the world that we exist in where everything makes sense is comfortable, right? And the one where things are flipped upside down and they don't make sense or everything's new has the potential to be wondrous but also very scary.
Yes.
And that's why you see it with little kids or babies, that moment, that hummingbird comes in and then it's like, oh God, what is that? There's a critical moment, and any parent will watch their child. What are you going to choose in this moment? Are you going to be enjoying this moment, or are you going to be afraid of it? And you know, the kid makes the choice at that point. So why would this be a place that you want to be? This wonder, awe, newness.
Well, I think people intuitively recognize that it's something that everyone needs in their life. And I guess we all need some measure of stability and sense where we understand things, but we also need novelty and kind of to get outside of the box, outside of our
rigid
frames. Yeah.
I think that's really why, because it's boring without it. I mean, if everything's the same every day, I mean, that's torture for a lot of people. It's just in and out every day is the exact same. You need that newness and freshness to make life worth living.
Yeah.
And if you can take that experience and state of being and put that into the everyday life where you may be on the same commute you've taken all year or longer, but you're seeing everything in fresh eyes. And that's alchemy. That's so valuable to be able to do that. But it's hard to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We met that guy at the meditation retreat a few years back. Werner?
Yes.
he's just permanently at this meditation retreat. I think he lives there. I don't think he travels much or does anything else. But the first time I saw him, I noticed right away his bug-eyed nature. He was just always like his eyes were as wide as they could go. And I thought that was so weird. I thought there was something weird about that. Like it seemed like he was almost... You have to be flexing muscles to be able to do that. You can't just be relaxed and in that state all the time. I was like, he must be doing that on purpose. And what is he doing? So after meditating for I think it was like 5 days or something that we were there, I started doing it at the end just to think, you know, there's so much time when you're at a meditation retreat. You're not supposed to talk to anyone. So you're just there meditating. And if you're not meditating, you're just observing your surroundings. And I was observing this guy quite a lot. And I just tried it after a while. And it was almost like the novelty-inducing action. Like it's the thing that you could do to induce novelty. You just open your eyes wide and try and see everything in your environment at once and see all the movement and notice all the sounds and everything. And to me, I was like, oh, I see what he's doing. He's actually meditating in this state. He's just in constant open awareness meditation, and he's trying to be as open as possible, and that literally shows up on his face with the way his eyes open.
Mm-hmm. So there's a tattoo that I have on my belly with chaos on one side and order on the other side. And it's something that kind of came to me in a realization when I was about 18 or 19 years old, that there's kind of a constant push and pull. They're almost like forces in the universe, expansion and contraction, chaos and order, you know, things kind of building up and breaking down all the time. And it's always in flux. So novelty is more on the chaos side. It kind of throws you out of your familiar state and puts you into something new. And I think we just need both. It has to be a balance of both.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're constantly living in that state of chaos, then, well, how do you build anything? If you don't have any certainty about anything at all, how do you exist? I don't know. Maybe you have an answer. Can you?
Well, I'm the kind of person that, I mean, I'm very goal-oriented. I have kind of one North Star I'm always heading to. And at one point when figuring out how my own mind works and what is the universe about became that North Star, and I started searching for that, I seriously considered just living in a meditation retreat permanently, or going to the mountains somewhere and finding, you know, some way to permanently remove myself from civilization. It really became a thing that I was thinking about, and I chose not to for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons was I still want to be active in the world in some way, and maybe I can figure this out without having to completely disappear. So I'm not necessarily convinced that getting things done in the world is even a worthwhile endeavor still, even mm-hmm. though that's what I'm doing. You know, a lot of the different esoteric teachers would say it's all attachment. It's just, you know, you're being of the world. Be in the world, not of the world. And being attached to getting things done and in achieving material successes and that sort of stuff is just almost like another path to suffering. And yeah, so long answer to your question, I'm not sure it's worth doing things in the world, even though I still do things in the world.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I've thought about is that if you investigate deeply, we can't really know what things are. I mean, we can guess, but at the end of the day, we don't really know what the nature of reality is like. And so whatever we choose to do is just kind of like, well, this is what we're doing. You know,
yeah, it's like, we'll figure it out until we die,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then maybe hopefully we'll get some sort of answer at the end of life.
Yeah, I think it was an Alan Watts quote that something we don't know what is doing something we don't know what or something like that. So it's basically a statement that doesn't make sense. But, you know, if you investigate consciousness deeply enough, it just like it all stops making sense at one point. And so, but then you still have to choose what are you going to do with your life, and you might as well do something.
Yeah, that's really it. Like, that's the thing preventing people from committing suicide. I might as well do something. Might as well see how this thing ends out.
Yeah, and then that kind of brought me to another realization. Well, if we're going to be doing something, then we might as well be serving. We might as well be useful to the whole, if we're going to be doing something at all.
I did not come to the same conclusion. I mean, I think service is a consequence of doing something you love. It's just it ends up helping people if you do something you love, or inspiring them, or entertaining them, or something. But I think you can be selfishly motivated and still be of service.
Maybe. I think it's kind of like the Japanese concept of ikigai.
Yeah, right.
Where it's something that you love, something that you're really good at, something that the world needs, and something that gets you paid.
Right.
If those things overlap, then you get your life purpose.
Right.
I think that's a pretty useful concept to think about.
Yeah. So you said at the very beginning, novelty could be achieved both through meditation and psychedelics. So maybe we can talk about the psychedelics aspect a little bit.
Sure. It's kind of like, you know, taking a rocket ship and just going somewhere very quickly. It just, you don't get an option not to. It just throws you right in
mm-hmm.
to a certain state and makes you contemplating things that you haven't contemplated before, and gives you perceptions that you haven't perceived before, and it flips your whole worldview upside down a lot of the time, which can be really useful.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, people have been using psychedelics for thousands of years, really, to get into altered states, to find, you know, different types of plants, useful plants out in the wild. Like, it changes your vision. And some have said that it actually can help with tracking prey, mm-hmm. tracking movement, because the colors are more vibrant and, you know, like, and the edges are more defined. I don't know. I've noticed that on mushrooms for sure.
I think there's another aspect to it, which is something that we already mentioned, is that it removes that analytical overlay.
Right.
So
it's almost like you're using more of your senses.
Yeah, you're using more of your senses, and you're perhaps using more of your primal senses rather than just thinking about stuff intellectually.
Right.
It puts you more in the moment.
Right.
I definitely experienced that, where I just have this inexplicable ability to... what it feels like I'm communicating with plants. Like, it's not verbal, but I was walking, I went for this hike. Several days after doing ayahuasca, I went for this hike where we were supposed to be looking for wild herbs. And I found several times where I don't know how, but I just knew where the herbs were. I would just suddenly, you know, turn off the path and go several meters this way, and there it would be. Or I found, you know, a mushroom that way, where I just like, oh, I have to go here and I don't know why. And then there's a mushroom. And it just like, I know this is really weird, but it felt like it was almost talking to me, but not in words. Mm-hmm. So there must be some sort of evolved ability that we have to find food. It makes perfect sense, but it's just kind of blocked by this intellectual overlay. So we don't notice it most of the time. Mm-hmm.
Lately I've been on a bit of a kick with learning about higher dimensions. And this is something I've dived into, you know, several months back and quite a lot in the last couple of years. It's something that is really intriguing because there's a lot of people studying it. Quantum physics, string theory is this theory that there are higher dimensions and that these dimensions are linked to each other. And that... that in itself is enough that it should disrupt any view that what you know and what you think you know and what you see and what you sense and what is commonly agreed upon as true is not necessarily true, or at least not all that there is. Mm-hmm. And that to me is enough to kind of shift all thinking away from that's not true, that's not possible, to if higher dimensions are possible and we are higher dimensional beings existing in and out of more than just up, down, left, right, then these sort of, you know, different psi phenomenon have room in physics to be real. I mean, and they're things that it's interesting after interviewing Dean Radin, how he talked so much about how many of his colleagues and people that had listened to him or heard of him or read his books had reached out to him to say that they've had different experience of psi phenomenon, whether it be precognition or synchronicity, any number of things, and that they were too afraid to go out and speak about it. And so they just reached out to him personally. And then he said, well, you've actually got a colleague in your own department that has also reached out to me. You guys should be talking about it. Anyway, I'm just saying this to say that it's interesting that these ideas about the way that the brain works and the evolved abilities that we may have could allow for things that are just not commonly agreed upon in standard physics models.
And this, again, relates to what we're talking about with this analytical overlay, that we have seem to have a conflict between what we think is true based on the concepts and the relationships between them that we have and our actual experience. So what Dean Radin found is that something like 95% of all people have had what would be classified as a psychic experience, but they just can't fit it into their model of the world, and scientists can't either fit it into their model of the world. So that's why they can't figure out how to study it or where to fit it or how to talk about it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, because experientially it's still there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's funny. I mean, and the explanations that people use to kind of shoehorn this into standard physics models is just ridiculous. Excuse me. Like, what are some versions of people saying explaining telepathy, or the thing that everyone experiences when they call someone they've been thinking about for the last couple of days, and that person calls you at the exact same time, and you either like run to a busy signal or you connect directly to each other, you know, that when the phone does that sometimes. That's pretty weird, especially when you haven't talked to someone in years and all of a sudden you're thinking of each other in the exact same day. I mean, that happens to me like 4 or 5 times a year at least.
Or yeah. Sometimes when you and I think about something at the same time that is completely unrelated to anything we've been talking about, and I'd be like, oh, I was thinking about this, and you'd be like, whoa, I was thinking about the same thing.
Yeah, and I mean, most people explain that as coincidence, or as like, well, your brain's probably just picked up on some pattern and your unconscious mind brought that to your conscious mind's attention at a similar time, and there must have been some trigger in your environment to make you recognize that at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But the chances of that are so huge and unlikely. Excuse me.
Not to mention that we don't really understand what the unconscious mind does or how it works or mm-hmm. what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, back to the psychedelics thing, like people have been taking psychedelics for thousands of years as a tool, as a way to increase novelty, strip away the logical mind, start seeing things with the raw senses, get that raw sensory data, allow the unconscious mind to bubble up to the surface and become conscious, utilize all of those tools and those abilities to process that information on a primal level and come up with better decision-making abilities, you know, better tracking ability, better finding the food that will keep you alive. You mm-hmm. know?
This is something that Don Roberto was talking about. I don't know if we included it in the podcast episode, but it was in the lecture that he gave one of the days before or after that. And he was talking about how that was kind of the function of shamans in tribal societies, is that they would try to uncover information that was unseen.
Right.
So they would go into a trance or take some, you know, mushrooms or some other psychedelic, and they would try to figure out something that the tribe couldn't figure out. And, you know, a lot of the time it had to do with food or like knowing that there was danger coming from a certain direction that they didn't yet know about, or, you know, figuring out what kind of disease somebody had that they couldn't figure out otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm interested in what Dean Radin is doing, especially because, and you know, for you guys listening, you should go check out that episode. It's one of the first video ones that we've done on our YouTube channel. But Dean is interesting because he is kind of spearheading these studies, and he's an actual scientist, like a proper, like he's doing
double-blind experiments.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Yeah,
placebo-controlled.
Yeah.
Proper science. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's assembling other scientists who have done the same kinds of tests. And like he's really proving some of these things that are very, well, there's no consensus on in the mainstream science community.
Yeah. He still has critics and people who say that, you know, his research design is flawed. But
mm-hmm. What I'm curious of is, you know, what he's trying to do is help people replicate these experiments by giving them, you know, cheap, easy, you know, recreatable experiments. What I'm interested in is, what does a global society look like when it is able to tap into these sort of new ideas and models of existence and realize, like, what if we are multidimensional beings that have the ability to, you know, with quantum entanglement, to be telepathic, or, you know, to, I don't know, the finding plants thing is such a weird thing. Like,
I know, it's like, because to me, experientially, it was like, well, it happened. I experienced it. So it wasn't even weird at the time that it was happening. I only kind of thought it was weird later when I tried to communicate it to someone. I was like, the words coming out of my mouth are strange, but the experience wasn't strange.
Yeah.
Just felt so natural.
How many mothers have had some instinct about their child being in danger or being in trouble? Or how many twins have had a connection between each other, that, you know, something was going on and the other one was in danger. I mean, that's one thing that I think is pretty common. I'm just looking for like common things that people could be like, oh yeah, I guess I've kind of had that experience.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the danger thing comes up, or when some sort of abnormal event is about to happen, I sometimes get little like flashes of what's about to happen.
Yeah.
There's the coffee shop one when we were in Turkey, like, you know, something occurred over in here, someone fell down the stairs or dropped something down the stairs, and then another guy over on the left dropped something. And I was like, I said to you, and there's no one really around us in the immediate, I guess there was like, you know, a few tables left and right, but there's no one really standing over you or anything. But I said to you, like, move your laptop in closer. You know, things are going wrong, and I kind of picture someone spilling a coffee, and you didn't really do it. Mm-hmm. And then someone got up and just dumped an entire coffee on your keyboard.
Yeah, it was like milky, sugary, just the stickiest mess.
Yeah.
The whole cup on my keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was within seconds of that thought. And the guy wasn't anywhere near. Like, there was no way to actually, like, pick that up out of the environment other than, you know, these unrelated events of someone else slipping and falling. And, you know, it seems like all coincidence, but that kind of thing is actually so common.
Yeah.
Like, that happens, I don't know, once a month at least, where I see something coming.
Yeah.
And how uncommon should that be? How likely is that, statistically speaking, to occur?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a couple days ago, somebody posted about an event that they were hosting in the Future Thinkers group. And I had literally been thinking about hosting a very similar event on the exact same day here in Bulgaria. And it was so strange that they posted about it, because I hadn't heard about that thing before. And I'd been thinking about it for weeks. So it was like, whoa. But then at the same time, stuff like this happens to us constantly.
Yeah.
Just synchronicity machines.
So this is the other thing I think is interesting, is it's one of those things that seems like if you allow for the existence of these different phenomenons in your world model, then you might be more willing to see them and actually count that as a check, you know? When something does happen that's out of the ordinary, you wouldn't like constantly be saying, oh, that's just a coincidence, or that's just a coincidence, even though there are coincidences, but you wouldn't like chalk up really abnormal events to that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When it becomes part of your world model.
Yeah, sometimes people ask, like, do you have to believe in something to see it in the world? And I actually think, no, I actually think that if you disbelieve most things, then you're just more open to whatever is.
Hmm.
So being able to exist in a state of uncertainty where you don't necessarily strongly believe anything makes you a lot more open to the world.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's a kind of state that psychedelics can induce, and a lot of meditation can induce. And then, you know, after you've been in that state for long enough and enough times that you're able to kind of navigate it and exist in it without going crazy or being scared, then the world opens up to you.
And how do you describe the utility of that to people who would be like, well, I'm just wasting time, what's the point of that? Probably not for them anyway.
Yeah, probably not for them. The only argument that I can make is that the world is changing very, very fast right now, and it's difficult to make sense of anything anyway. So being in this kind of state of openness is just adaptive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's improving sense making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So.
So take psychedelics, kids. No. No, don't.
No. Yeah. I guess we have to make a disclaimer. Don't take things that are illegal in your country. We are not advocating for anything like that. There are countries where those kinds of substances are legal. You can do your own research and make your own decisions.
There we go. Absolved. See you guys in the next episode.
Okay, bye.
This episode is brought to you by Qualia, a nootropic supplement that helps support mental performance and mood. To get 10% off, use the code FUTURE at checkout. And to learn more about neurohacking, visit futurethinkers.org/neuro.
Thanks for tuning in to Future Thinkers. For all the books, resources, and mentions from this episode, go to futurethinkers.org/71. Don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell icon to get notified of new videos. You can also follow us on social media to stay connected. If you'd like to get a t-shirt like the new Make America Think Again, go to futurethinkers.org/store. If you like what we do and you want to help us make more podcasts and videos, consider donating or becoming a patron at futurethinkers.org/support. Also visit our sponsor Qualia and use the coupon code FUTURE to get 10% off your purchase.